Millions of people are living better. They are enjoying a healthier lifestyle, learning more about overcoming obstacles and keeping a positive outlook. Now you can be a member of the club. This is the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. Our guests share incredible stories and advice, bring new outlooks on wellness, and show you how to keep moving forward. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Casciani.
Welcome to all of our listeners tuning in today. This is Joe Casciani, your host for this radio program. We are on the Health and Wellness channel of the Voice America Network. Thank you for joining us. On today's show, we have an esteemed guest and colleague who will be talking about mental health and successful aging. What does mental health have to do with staying physically healthy? What should the 50 and over age group know about healthy aging? We've known for many years that good mental health goes hand in hand with how well we can cope with stressful events in our lives. And mental illness and psychiatric disorders, on the other hand, bring with it unique challenges to practicing proper lifestyle approaches. These disorders likely interfere with these lifestyle behaviors like good diet and eating habits, regular exercise, and positive outlooks, all behaviors that contribute to living longer and healthier. We'll take a deep dive into this topic on today's Living to 100 Club radio program. I'm happy to introduce today's guest, Dr. Murali Rao. Dr. Rao is the professor and chairman of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurosciences at Loyola University Medical Center in Chicago. He specializes in liaison and emergency psychiatry. Additionally, he serves as a member of multiple professional bodies, including the American College of Psychiatrists, the Academy of Psychosomatic Medicine, the Indian Psychiatric Society, and the American College of Forensic Psychiatry. Dr. Rao has received multiple awards and fellowships, including the Distinguished Life Fellow by the American Psychiatric Association, Outstanding Academician Award by the Indo-American Psychiatric Association, and the Master Teacher Award by the Stritch School of Medicine. He's now also the author of 50 Plus and Healthy, What You Need to Know About Mental Health and Healthy Aging. Welcome to today's show, Dr. Rao.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for joining us. So let's start with, briefly tell us about your background and your work in geriatric psychiatry.
Thank you. Well, I've been a psychiatrist now for 40 plus years, whenever geriatric psychiatry became a subspecialty for the first time, I'm one of those first group of people who took the subspecialty in geriatric psychiatry. So I'm as old as the American Association of Geriatric Psychiatry board members. That's my background, and currently I'm at Loyola, having an academic appointment as a professor and chair. So my two things I do is consultation liaison psychiatry, all hospital consultations, and some amount of geriatric psychiatry. And I'm born in India. I migrated here 45 years ago.
Ah, wow, okay. So that's a long tenure in geriatric psychiatry. So gold stars to you for that subspecialty. I know there's not a lot of mental health professionals that kind of specialize in geriatrics. So that's good. That's good to hear. We know we need more of that. So let's start with your book. What inspired you to write your book, 50 Plus and Healthy?
Okay, the book is 50 Plus and Healthy. It is to help thousands of people suffering from mental health issues, being curious about mental health issues, particularly depression, anxiety disorders, loss of memory. Actually, anyone suffering with either memory-related issues or depression, especially of the later years of onset, and caregivers who are struggling to know more. Mm-hmm. So, for those who just simply want to learn healthy aging, should definitely read the book and gift it. It's been written in very simple layman terms. It's for everybody to read to help recognize various mental health related issues.
Mm-hmm.
My idea is, you know, so you don't have to be a cardiologist or a lung specialist. If somebody in front of you in a line collapses, right? If you know CPR, you just go and follow the CPR steps and resuscitate until the right kind of help comes. So the book has a mnemonic called game plan, and which is each letter stands for the actions one can take. You don't have to be a professional to recognize and to deal with a crisis that you may be seeing, what you can handle and what you cannot handle when it's a crisis that you have to refer to immediate care versus those who don't need that kind of urgent care, what you can do, how to approach that individual, and to be knowledgeable about it. So this is good for everybody to know. You know, this is good for our police, you know, the fire, and anybody who's interested, anybody who's doing public service, just for everybody. You know, it's just sure. Like we want to know about our physical health. We also should know very well about our mental health, so that helps to remove the stigma. Because if it's a physical health, it's more acceptable. If it's a mental health issue, there is so much of fear and stigma. To me, that's because of lack of knowledge. So this kind of easy-to-read books are to help people be knowledgeable and not run away, but to help deal with the situation more effectively.
Sure, sure. So it's a handbook of sorts where people can learn more about how to help, what steps to take if they see someone in distress. Does it talk about staying healthy, or are we really addressing mostly the mental health functioning?
Well, it's about healthy aging. Okay, that's the reason. 50 plus. The reason you asked me the first question about what made me write this book, because when I'm seeing elderly patients, usually they are parents brought to the office by their children or caregivers. So many times they sit through the interview because as the memory decline advances, the patient concerned may not be able to relate to what's going on with them. And it's always the collateral information that the family member shares with us is very important. And they are the ones actually who need guidance and help. So after many, many years, I saw a common theme. Those children, now they're adults, of course, so this so-called sandwich generation, having their own families, their own jobs, careers, and the parents to take care of. So after they drop their parents back to the waiting area, they quietly come back and commonly ask me a question about, will this happen to me when I grow old? So there is so much of anxiety about having seeing somebody who are their parents lifelong, and now they're changing with late onset conditions, psychiatric conditions, and they start worrying about themselves. So I thought, this is what I've been talking to them about. So all the necessary questions they ask and the necessary answers I've given, I tabulated them, and that's a book now. So sure. It's for anybody to read.
Sure, sure. Great. So can you tell us, I understand when you see kind of themes and patterns continue over the years. I've had the same experience in my work with nursing home patients, and a lot of the common themes that would keep surfacing, that's what I wrote my book about as well. So it's easy to kind of consolidate and pull together all of those insights that we develop and recommendations for others. So are the adult children concerned about their parents' cognitive functioning or depression or isolation, everything?
Any late onset disorders, you know, most commonly late onset depressions and late onset or early mild cognitive impairment and late onset paranoid disorders, late onset anxiety disorders. So those who had healthy life, it's a totally different ball game than the people who, like, 75% of all known mental illnesses begin before the age of 25. And so somebody who had lived well up until middle life and then starts getting these kind of symptoms is more than hereditary, could be more acquired. Usually it kind of heralds something serious going to happen. Depression is not just a mood disorder, especially in the late onset depression. It is signaling that your body is not doing well, because they've done follow-up studies of late onset depression, 5 and 10 years, and they usually saw that they had multiple comorbid conditions, common ones like hypertension, hyperlipidemia, hypertension, and those who present with depression with one or two of those other factors, risk factors, were likely to either have a mini or a full stroke or a myocardial event. So depression of late onset cannot be taken lightly. It cannot be just treated as a mood disorder. We should really do a thorough investigation of the lifestyle habits, what can be reversed, what can be treated and controlled to prevent the onslaught that it is signaling, which is going to be a vascular event. Either, you know, most common ones are myocardial infarction, this commonly called heart attack, and the brain attack, the stroke. So, so depression, we should look at other things going on in the body and not only treat the depression, but also address the other risk factors. It's very important.
So what type of interventions, when you see these comorbid conditions, these comorbid, say, chronic diseases or other conditions, what becomes the primary medical approach? Are you looking to refer to colleagues, or are you addressing the depression?
Well, it's a teamwork, and of course, you talk to the people who are managing the diabetes, hypertension, the primary care physicians, sometimes the specialists, either a neurologist or a cardiologist, and so that we address the whole person in a holistic way, you know, look at their nutrition, look at their habits, you know, they're smoking or using any other drugs or drinking excessively, and are they doing exercise, and are they trying to control their salt intake, are they checking their blood pressures frequently, are they managing their diabetes all right? So it's like an overall approach to address all the issues. So depression is kind of a signal that will help us to, I'm only talking about late onset depression, so that kind of signals us to look at the whole individual and help them to change their lifestyle and habits, because we are human beings, 70% creatures of habit. So it's a hard thing to do, but that's where you need in the role as physicians and the healthcare workers to act as a team and influence to the best you can. It may not always work, but at least if you can control a few factors, it's better than none.
Sure. Yes, and we know it is difficult to change behavior. I'm wondering, then maybe there are times when you do not need to refer to a colleague, other specialists, but you can help address some of these lifestyle factors. Have you ever seen some changes in the depression as a person becomes more physically active or changes their diet or becomes more socially interactive? Do you see some lifting of the depression?
Right. I think, you know, the very fact that they come to our attention is either because they notice a change in themselves, which is wonderful. If not, somebody that was significant to them, the employer or a spouse or the children or, you know, siblings, somebody said, you are not the same, things have changed, let's go. They come with somebody else's guidance or somebody's caring for them. And just coming to seek help itself is like half the work done.
Yes.
And then once the problem is identified, then if we stay with them and guide them along, it's not an immediate thing. It's a long-term process, but that's where we get involved with other people taking care of them and see what we can do as a network to improve the life of the person.
Yes, sure. Sure. Yeah, so you've seen those cases come in where there are these lifestyle habits that may not be the best necessarily for the people, and it's associated with their decline in functioning and increased depression. So as you bring in other interventions, you know, the nutritionists or the exercise physiologist or whoever, you have seen these changes then with your patients. Yeah.
Yes. Especially the coming to the later years, about one-third of the most common kind of dementia, of course, is Alzheimer's disease, which is about 60% of all dementias. And about one-third of Alzheimer's disease begin as depression. So depression with the mild cognitive impairment, early memory loss. So it gets misconstrued most of the time as advanced dementia because of depression clouding over the mild memory loss. So many a times, that's why it's called pseudo-dementia, the false dementia. So where you treat depression aggressively, then the dementia which looked worse than what it should be, once the cloud is lifted, they have a few more years to have a good life. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is always a conversion rate. Those who have mild cognitive impairment, the follow-up studies show that every year of the follow-up, about 10 to 15% of them convert into dementia, most commonly Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. But that's where impact has to be made to prolong the wellness, to delay the onset of dementia.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we used to talk about the pseudo-dementia and how that picture could mimic the true dementias. And I know when we were doing a lot of the psychological evals, mm-hmm. we could help to understand, make the distinction, because there are certain patterns to the pseudo-dementia, the false dementia, as compared to the dementia. You know, I'd like to pick up with this, but we need to take a quick break. Dr. Rayo, we'll pick up with this on the other side. So it's time to take a short break. Before we pause, I also want to remind our listeners about my new book, Living Longer is the New Normal. Even at 100, inspiration and a positive mindset can be put to good use. This is the message in the book. Pick up a copy on Amazon today. And a reminder for our listeners about Q&A. If you have questions for our guest today, please email them to info@living2100.club or call them into 866-472-5792. Again, please feel free to send in your questions. We enjoy taking your questions. So this is Joe Casciani, and you're listening to the Living to 100 Club on Voice America. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club to experience the creative spirit, inspiration, and wellness information that you're looking for to maintain a healthy lifestyle, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find links to leading aging organizations and see our series of blogs. Get details about our weekly radio show and schedule of upcoming guests. Sign up to be a club member to receive newsletters and radio announcements and a copy of our member handbook, or opt for an annual premium membership with special access to our secure member forum and opportunities to ask the experts, plus transcripts of show recordings and other members-only offers. Visit the Living to 100 Club website for awareness, insights, and independence. Find us at livingto100.club. That's livingto100.club.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go, on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
All right, we're back. Thanks to everyone for staying with us. We're talking today with Dr. Murali Rao about aging and mental health. During the break, Dr. Rao reminded me that he also has a website associated with the new book. It's 50plushealthy.com. Is that right, Dr. Rao? 50 plus?
That's correct, yes. Plus is in the word 50plushealthy.com.
50plushealthy.
So you can access the book, or you can access the book through Amazon.
Great, great. Also available on Amazon. And the proceeds are going to a foundation that you have developed in India. It's the NNDC. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm glad you brought it up. The World Health Organization reported that India is going to be the center of depression with this huge population by 2030. And that opened my eyes, because here I was involved with the NNDC, National Network of Depression Centers, which was founded on the basis of the success of National Network of Cancer Centers to address the depression. And it's headquartered in Michigan, and I got the license affiliation with them, and on the same order, established National Network of Depression Centers India Foundation. And the whole aim is to create public awareness, like training courses, first aid kind of training courses in mental health, and behavioral training programs for children, for the parents and teachers of the children, and for the adults, substance abuse, elderly, workplace mental health. So I've written many of those training manuals, so that's being used by training villages, and we are in the process of translating it into local languages. India has a lot of languages and dialects, so one by one, it's a slow process, but that's the whole idea, public awareness.
Yeah, a very worthwhile project. That's an important project. Thank you for telling
Thank
us.
You.
We did get a question during the break. Someone sent in an email asking about poor sleep in older people. Are we talking about depression or dementia, or how much of this is normal aging?
Excellent question. Sleep is so essential and so important, not only to have a rested, refreshed next day, but also we recently have learned that what happens during the sleep and what's the purpose of the brain being bathed in cerebrospinal fluid, which was always thought to be a cushion against damage in mild head injuries and stuff like that, but the neurons are so set up in orderly sheets. And less than 4 or 5 years ago, they found out that the cerebrospinal fluid flows through the sheets and almost like cleanses the metabolites and brings it out into the circulation to be excreted. So sleep is very important for cleansing the brain for the next day. So having said that, I want to quote Dr. James Lake, who calls 4 pillars of good mental health, one being getting enough sleep. And sleep hygiene, like they describe, that not to do work in the bed or read or watch TV. When you go to the bed, it's the purpose of sleeping only. Until then, one should not go. And it should be unwinding activities, whether it be mild music or quietness or dim lights, or gradually ease into sleep. You should create an environment like that. Each individual has their own ways of doing it, but it should be given priority and done properly. And getting enough sleep should be one. And the second 4 pillars, he says, are one is for mental health and health in general is getting enough sleep. Number two is regular physical activity. If you do any physical activity, I mean, nowadays everybody carries a phone which measures the steps you take in a day. On the days when you have stepped 5,000, 6,000 steps or something like that, you sleep like a baby. And also, it's good for your heart and lungs. So it's a cardiovascular exercise. So regular physical activity is number two. Number three is healthy nutrition. I will go into the research part of it later part, but healthy nutrition. And the last one is learning whatever applies to us, a way of addressing stress management. For each one, the stress managing ritual is going to be different, and some need help, some have their own ways of calming down, or, you know, taking a walk, taking deep breaths, meditation, yoga, exercise, number of things. See what works for one and have that stress management tool ready. So if you have these four, this he calls, Dr. Lake, as 4 pillars of good mental health. And talking about depression and dementia connection, in the question that your viewer asked is, another interesting thing that we learned is people have suffered chronic depression all their life, and when they reach 60s and 70s, and when they have, not all of them, and some of them have onset of dementia, then when they did the study to look back how the depression was treated all those years, they found that people who had regularly and consistently had been treated with depression with psychotherapy, medication, whatever that worked best, and they stayed on it till they reached old age, seemed to have later onset of dementia, and they seemed to have on brain scans, the brain volumetrics, they're specifically measuring different parts of the brain, they found that the part which is very important for memory consolidation called hippocampus, the volume of the hippocampus remained intact in those who were treated for depression on a regular basis. And those who got intermittent treatment or no treatment, irregular treatment, they had a shrunken hippocampus in the early onset of dementia. So the important point to remember is depression is not just a mood disorder. And the treating the depression is not just to improve the mood. It's very important, of course, but you're also doing a good thing for your brain. You're protecting your brain, because any antidepressant methods we have today, whether it be psychotherapy, CBT, whether it be medications of a number of kinds addressing various neurotransmitters, or whether it is the newly utilized transcranial magnetic stimulation, all have the effect on hippocampal neurogenesis, including the latest ketamine therapy. They all work on the neurons in the hippocampal area. That's the ultimate thing. So we are protecting our brain, and also there is a brain-derived neurotrophic factor called BDNF, and successfully treated depression cases have got increased levels of BDNF, which again protects the brain. So treating depression is to feel better, have good mood and good energy to carry on our life's activities, but also to prevent the brain for the future from losing neurons and developing signs and symptoms of dementia.
Fascinating. I had not been aware of that research. Treatment of depression really offers some kind of a buffer, as you say, against any kind of deterioration of those cells in the hippocampus. Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, because depression is such a vast group of underlying conditions. Like it would be like in the last century, if they made a diagnosis as fever as the final diagnosis, and the depression could be coming from so many things. So many endocrine problems, and it's seen three times more in women because they go through upheavals in their hormone levels about five times during their lifetime, and therefore they have three times the incidence. And unfortunately, we do not have specific treatment meant for women, even though it was meant. So much was research and so much a hope to address the anti-CRH, which is the focus of where the depression could be coming from. That's the hormone that goes through havoc during the five stages of a woman's life, when a young girl becomes a woman, and when a woman has her period, and then when she becomes pregnant, and before she has the baby, and after she had the baby, and then the fifth time is when she has menopause. All these five times, one thing common is that either the CRH, the corticotropin-releasing hormone, is either on the upswing or on the downswing. And so there was so much of research done on anti-CRH, antidepressant, which we were all fascinated that we will have a specific antidepressant meant for women. But unfortunately, it didn't work out in real clinical trials. So the effort is still on. So depression means just an umbrella term. We have come to an age where we are able to, the latest thing is there is a way we may be able to predict who among the depressed may respond to antidepressants. By taking the EEG, the recent finding that you can predict that if they had a particular baseline EEG pattern, they would respond to antidepressants. Similarly, the Toronto group have found that people who got better of their depression using transcranial magnetic stimulation, they found their baseline pattern of functional connectivity of the brain, which is a different way of studying an fMRI. It's a computer analysis of a different method. So that shows the connectivity between the different parts of the brain. So there was a particular pattern in depressed patients. And those who got better, you could predict if at the baseline, if they had that pattern, probably they are the ones they should be directly on transcranial magnetic stimulation. So where the mental health field is going is maybe in 5 or 10 years, there will be a brief scan anybody will have before they see a psychiatrist, like you have an EKG before you see a cardiologist. And they could see the functional connectivity of a band. The Connectome project is going on, just like Genome Project. So that will also be completed in the next few years. So then we'll have a pattern we can see and see whether that matches the clinical picture to make a diagnosis and predict what treatment. Today, we are trying everything on everyone, hoping that something sticks. So a day will come when it will be personalized medicine, and who will be a good candidate for CBT, right on? Who is a good candidate for CBT and medication? Who is a good candidate for medication alone? Or who is a one for neuromodulation, such as TMS? So
TMS.
Then it will be suffering reduced because so much of time is spent in experimenting various therapies.
The more we learn, the more questions we have, and the more research we want to do, and the more solutions we are closer to, for sure. So I know a little bit about TMS. Can you tell us just quickly, is it transcranial magnetic stimulation? Is that Can you tell us about that?
Yes, Mark George from University of South Carolina, a neurologist and a psychiatrist, both. He's the father of TMS for United States. Before that, it was available in Europe before approval by FDA in 2008. So they had to do a multi-center study to prove that it really works for depression. It's not just one of the gimmicks. Mm-hmm. And they had to treat 10,000 patients and show that it lifted the depression significantly, at least 50% alleviation of symptoms. So after demonstrating that in the year 2008, we got approval in U.S. And 2005, it was approved in Canada. So since then, at that time, we were perhaps one of the earliest centers that opened in Loyola. Now, today, there will be at least 500-plus centers throughout the United States. And most centers are doing it as an adjunct to treatment-resistant depressions. These are the patients who are going for psychotherapy, patients going for taking their medications. Without that, they really get even more depressed. But at the same time, they're not recovered enough to be functional, like whether it be family life, occupational life, productive life. You know, they're just little less depressed, but not quite functional. For such patients, when you add on transcranial magnetism, because it's not a medication, you don't have to worry about taking it or interacting with any other drugs. It's magnetic waves that penetrate the skull without any interference, and there it activates the neurons, and they are connected. So even though you're touching the surface neurons, because of the interconnections, it reaches the deep parts of the brain, and the finding consistently in depression has been, I'm talking about major depression, clinical depression, major depression as a diagnosis, consistently has shown that the surface area of the brain, the cortex, the front right above your eyebrow, the brain behind that, the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, it's called, is found to be underactive compared to those who are not depressed. Similarly, a deeper part of the brain, which is emotional old part of the brain, is hyperactive, as shown by increased consumption of glucose by brain scans. And I mean, these are special scans, only research scans, they're not a regular MRI scan, not CT scans. These are special scans, fMRI scans. Now they have developed the activity maps that you can obtain by analyzing fMRIs differently. So they do see, they can see there are depressed brains are different than regular brains. And then those who respond to treatment do show that reversal. The upside-down regulation, which is proper, which is natural, so your emotions are regulated by your cognition, right? We don't show our emotions quickly and lose control over it. We try to tame it in a normal person. So what happens? It becomes bottom-side-up reversal of connectivity. So in TMS or antidepressant, whatever successful treatment, they clearly have shown that the hyperactive problem, parts of the deeper part of the brain become normal in activity, and the underactive surface brain becomes more active. So reestablishing the brain, like in a, resetting the brain in a way. That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, that's very helpful. That's very helpful. So the magnetic waves can affect the neurons there and on the surface, the cortical surface, where it is underactive, it becomes more active and vice versa for the deeper parts. That's good to know. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rao. It's time for a short break again. Before we break, I want to invite our listeners to the Living to 100 Club website. We've done some recent updates, so it's now content rich for anyone wanting resources and insights on your journey to 100. So be sure to visit us at www.livingto100.club. Now, quick break. This is Joe Casciani. You're listening to the Living to 100 Club radio program on the Voice America Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club to experience the creative spirit, inspiration, and wellness information that you're looking for to maintain a healthy lifestyle, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find links to leading aging organizations and see our series of blogs. Get details about our weekly radio show and schedule of upcoming guests. Sign up to be a club member to receive newsletters and radio announcements and a copy of our member handbook, or opt for an annual premium membership with special access to our secure member forum and opportunities to ask the experts, plus transcripts of show recordings and other members-only offers. Visit the Living to 100 Club website for awareness, insights, and independence. Find us at livingto100.club. That's livingto100.club.
Sometimes it just seems that nobody understands. There's one individual who can help. If you're living with somebody who faces challenges such as autism, Asperger's, or other exceptional needs, you'll want to tune into Solutions and Strategies with Dr. Sean. Living the Challenge. Together, we'll uncover a variety of solutions to the challenges faced by individuals, their families, and teachers. Listen live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
All right, and we're back. Thanks to everyone for staying with us. We're talking today with Dr. Murali Rao about his new book, 50 Plus and Healthy, What You Need to Know About Mental Health and Aging. We've been talking about a lot of parts of mental health with older adults, Dr. Rao. Let's talk a little bit more about your book and what are the highlights? What do you want our listeners to know about your book? You have a number of approaches there, practical approaches, techniques. What would you highlight for us? Yeah.
Good. The book 50 Plus and Healthy is in clearly layman terms, and it's for everybody who wants to know about mental health related issues and about healthy aging. So the book begins with the famous quote of Mark Twain, who said, "Age is an issue of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter." So we frequently hear about yesterday's 60s, today's 50s, yesterday's 70s, today's 60s, something like that. So I think a time has come that when you go to a birthday party, 50, 60, and 70, time has come not to ask the question how old you are, but ask how old you feel. It depends on a better question. Because each one ages differently. And healthy aging is the focus of the book. So the book talks about healthy aging, and it talks about the stigmas related to mental illness, and it has got six real cases which kind of highlights the commonly seen problems and lots of myths we have. So there's a chapter on demystifying the myths, and each chapter has got a simple question and answer at the end so that we retain what we read. And then there is the mnemonic game plan, GAMEPLAN, explained, each letter standing for what. It is like a CPR for mental health, what anybody can do when they see their loved one or somebody that they want to help, but feel that they're not qualified, but they can do the first aid kind of steps. So that is described in the game plan. I'll be happy to briefly explain what game plan is. And then it concludes with bringing physical, mental, psychological, spiritual, varieties of aspects of life into, because we are, at the end of the day, we are holistic beings, not just body and not just mind, physical, emotional, mental, behavioral. They entangle and they interact with each other. And what is the most important thing to deal with ourselves? I mean, we are the only ones without a owner's manual, right? So to have a knowledge is the personal power we cannot have. Knowledge about ourselves. And to the best we know, we don't know all the answers, but whatever is known, at least that knowledge is so important, because to me, to fight stigma effectively, the counter stigma, what you need is education and knowledge, because that takes away the darkness around the mental illness and brings it to the limelight. And to get that personal power to heal and to be healthy, that's the ultimate goal. That's how the book concludes. So it's a fairly, it's not a very big book. It's very readable, and it's something that you always have for reference. And then there is this game plan. I'll just go over highlights. It is described much more in detail. Like, for example, this letter G in the game plan, it is to assist everybody of any age in the moments of distress or in mental health crisis. G is growth. Especially for the elders, we think they already have grown, now they are declining, and that's again a myth. So help elders flourish in a mentally healthy environmental life. Don't sideline them, because they are having, with age comes physical decline. I mean, again, in some it comes more than others. Common to see them, right, wearing glasses as we get older and needing hearing aids and needing dentures, what have you. We need more gadgets to keep functioning, and to recognize that and make sure that they participate in the family activities. Sidelining is the worst thing to do, because that stifles the opportunity for growth, experience, and learning, because that happens throughout life. Doesn't stop at any age. That's for G. Second thing is A, most important, A, awareness. To know what symptoms and signs are to be looked for, for a depression, or somebody who's psychotic, somebody who's becoming paranoid, just to recognize that. And first thing to learn to know when it's a crisis, when it's not a crisis. When it's a crisis, of course, handle it. Let the professionals handle it, 911. But when it's not a crisis, if it's your friend at a work or somebody that you see in your club or your church that you want to talk to them, and you have seen them changing and you don't know how to approach them, it gives you some awareness of what to look for and how to be non-judgmental when you talk to them. Give them your ears and be with them and let them develop that confidence and trust in you, and start slowly opening. It won't question by like a courtroom lawyer questions. It won't happen like that. So you have to spend some time with them, and then they will slowly start unwinding, like happens in psychotherapies, which is professionally done. But even a good friend can be a good listener and be non-judgmental, so that they can understand. Awareness is the letter A. Then is M, is for matching. So to match each person for their needs with the right kind of resources. That matching, whether it's medical, whether it's a home support, whether it's transportation, it's financial, so on and on. You recognize what they are and help them. It's going to go a long way. And the E is for inquire. There are two ways of inquire. Is listen. To listen And also not to give up at one time inquiry. Follow up on that. Following week, how are things going? You know, walk with them in real sense and see where they're going and if they're going in the right direction and try to help them. The next, after game, the plan, the P is for preparing for extended needs and accommodations. I see this all the time. Elderly gets admitted to the hospital, confused. We are called for consultation, and that is the confusion that made their dementia go to second stage. And with love, children want to take them back home, but they know they are unable to care for them because they don't have the ability, and the houses are not built to accommodate a person who is not walking. So they have to then think of a facility or additional help they need. So it's better to be prepared. I mean, when we know somebody has got early dementia, it's all right to know what could be in store, look around for the places that are safe and healthy, have a good reputation, so that you don't have to suddenly rush them into some unknown place. Okay. The next one is life and work balance. It's for all of us. That's for L. And it's good for, especially caregivers should have that balance, otherwise they get burnt out. The last one is A for assess. Initial assessments are involved, a regular checkup on progress as well as new needs that arise as the aging goes on. Last one is network. Network is so important. No one person, no one discipline can handle the needs of aging individuals, especially with those developing memory decline. So there we need really network, medical home support networks. So that's essentially the game plan. It's explained more clearly in the book.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I especially like the G for growth, and don't sideline. Don't get in the way. Yeah. And growth, awareness, matching each person with needs and resources, and E for inquire, and then prepare and plan.
Need this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I missed the A, the second A.
L. Second A is assess but not diagnose.
Assess but not diagnose.
Do a layman's assessment, which is plenty. Don't try to make a diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and
good.
Then network.
That's good. Mm-hmm. And network, right. Yeah. So questioning, inquiries, and listen, follow up. Don't just ask one time, but follow up. That's good information, good recommendations, practical approaches for our listeners. In just a minute that we have left, Dr. Rayo, we're in the middle of this terrible scourge in the U.S. and around the world about the coronavirus. What do you think the virus is? How is it affecting the mental health of older adults? Do you have any observations you can share with us?
Absolutely. I mean, as most of us are becoming increasingly aware of who are the people that we are losing day by day, are the most vulnerable ones, okay? So the most vulnerable ones, unfortunately, have been the older adults who have taken the brunt of this pandemic. They are the ones who have taken the brunt for varieties of reasons. One, they're already maybe having other underlying conditions such as cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, dementia, particularly 50% of the nursing home residents who cannot just go. They always are at the mercy of somebody's help. That means you cannot help stop the the traffic of the workers coming shift by shift and leaving. And so very easy to have all the vulnerable people in one place. And then if we don't prevent the spread in that environment. See, the early losses, like according to the report came in April 2020, showed that the whole world, the 90% of all the deaths that occurred was of 60 years or more, and half of all the deaths occurred in 80 years and above. So now the nursing homes have woken up, and now the nursing homes are coming with 100% negative COVID tests. So in the beginning, we didn't know the vulnerable population. The helpers would go in and out, so we could not keep the contact away. You know, healthy people could hide away in the home, but the people in the elderly homes needed to be cared for.
Yeah.
Plus, they had all these comorbid conditions. And in U.S., for example, 11% of all the cases last studied happened in long-term care facilities. But the death rate was 35%. It shows disproportionately how the elderly got affected.
It is much harder.
It's a challenge to keep them. And the very important thing is the despair and the social isolation that causes, you know, that without help, more without help. And that's the real challenge. And and those who take care of them, and when they start distancing them, that further causes to the isolation and depression. And and we have, you know, this pandemic showed one thing about our society, that we have an attitude about ageism. That I read somewhere it was so clear that the how much we care for the first 20 years of life, we do not for the last 20 years.
Yeah. I'm going to need to interrupt here and say that we're out of time. You know, I'd love to have you back and talk more about this, because we know we're going to be experiencing this hit for a long time, and it's going to be very difficult to recover. But for today, I really want to thank you sincerely for being a guest on our show. And for those who might want to contact you, how can they do that? Just go to your website, 50 Plus Healthy?
Yeah, 50 Plus Healthy for the book. And if they want to personally contact me, and I'm at Loyola University in Chicago, M, that's my first initial, M Rao, last name, M Rao, 1, at Loyola University Medical Center, LUMC.edu. M Rao, 1, at LUMC.edu.
.edu. Great. Thank you so much. And thanks to our listeners. See you next time.
Thank you for being part of the Living to 100 Club. We hope you'll join Dr. Joe Casciani again next Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until next week, stay on the right track to mental and physical fitness.